Once again, on the JURS podcast, we have no shortage of inspirational interviews and discussions. I'm your host, Soli. Once again, I got actor and activist Jesus Nabot, and he is here to promote some other happenings that's been occurring lately. And you've seen him guest star on NYPD Blue and Arrested Development. And I've been a huge fan of his since the multi-festival award-winning movie No Turning Back first came on the DVD scene. And here he is to talk about just so many other just social concerns and current events that he hopes to just make very present in his upcoming projects. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Cam. Thank you for the beautiful introduction.
I try.
Very good to meet.
And it's just also just you've worn so many hats, and so many of your movies just were constantly on cable TV, and you're one of many talents who have been kind of these invisible warriors, for lack of a better description, who have been around for years. But it's a good reminder to others that, hey, you know, just because we don't know your name doesn't mean we haven't seen you in so many different projects. And I just love how you've done everything from teaching acting to, again, just stressing just current events that need to be addressed. Where do you think this courage first manifested itself?
You know, I feel that there has always been an interest in my part to express myself creatively. I was not very clear how I could do that. I didn't feel I was very talented painting or sculpturing or doing many other ways or many that I could express myself. And I don't know, I got into acting in a very, very weird way, quite frankly. It was not something that initially I had in mind. But somehow, as you know, my name is Jesus. And that consciousness of Jesus has been very present in me. And he has been an important role model in my life, quite frankly.
Oh, lovely.
And, and what I realized is that not just Jesus, but Jesus, as well as most spiritual masters, you can think about Buddha or Krishna or Muhammad, they were all, at the core, they were all excellent storytellers. Mm. And they used their storytelling ability to convey stories that, you know, had the ability to connect us with our true essence and bring wisdom to us, if you will. And so I figured out that if I was going to follow Jesus, one possible way for me was to make films that were socially relevant, films that had something to say, films that ultimately would give us the opportunity to empathize with others and to awaken our compassion and our love for one another. And I think that that's what I have aspired always as an independent filmmaker with all my work.
Oh, lovely. Beautifully rendered. And it kind of just makes us remind ourselves, you know how we always say the sky's the limit? If we really want to, we can say there is no limit.
True. True. I did not come from a family background where anybody was involved in the arts. I had no interest initially to you know, dedicate myself to this. But like I said, I had this opportunity. And it all came, to be completely honest, it all came because I have had this consciousness always. I was, you know, very much into peace for the world. And at one point, I was born in Spain. And in Spain, it was mandatory to do the military service.
Oh, wow.
And for me, it didn't make sense that I would dedicate myself, being a pacifist, to dedicate myself a whole year to train myself for war when I believed that that was not the answer to our problems and that what we had to is learn how to love one another and not necessarily go at war with each other. And unfortunately, because of that, I could not continue with my career. My initial intent when I was, when I was a teenager was to work as a, perhaps for the UNICEF or for United Nations, work in a capacity as an ambassador for world peace. But because I did not follow through with my military service in Spain, I was discriminated in the sense that I could not pursue my education in public colleges that I was intended to do. And that's how this all came about. I thought, well, what do I want to dedicate my life to? And as a peacemaker, I thought, well, here's a possibility to dedicate myself to the arts in a way that I could make a difference in presenting works of art that can eventually give us the opportunity to reflect on who we are and ultimately awaken our common humanity.
Perfect. It's easier to be a mascot, let alone represent a bigger image, as opposed to dedicate yourself to a cause that ultimately goes against every principle in your body. So you've lived in numerous areas, you've lived in so many different countries, you've been in so many different kinds of productions, from telenovelas to romantic dramas to the HBO movie Final Voyage. Why do you think you're so good at just still just shifting through and finding a new challenge, finding a new surrounding that does illustrate?
Well, I'll tell you what, and excuse me because my phone is ringing, but I'll tell you what, I think initially I knew that I had to do all kinds of work to find my path. And I did that in other countries. You are right about that. I started my career in Spain. And then I had the opportunity to star in some telenovelas. They are the typical soap operas that you have here in the U.S., except that over there, they are primetime programming. So they don't, you know, instead of in the morning, you have them at a primetime and, you know, definitely make you become very popular very, very fast. Once I achieved that level of, I don't know, of fame, if you will, once I was able to have that clout, I just did not want to stay in that Latino market. I really wanted to move forward with my life and try to figure out ways in which I could have more creative control over my career, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that's when I eventually ended up coming to the U.S. And when I came here, I wanted to initially do theater, and I wrote some theater, and then I jumped into producing films. And, you know, I basically had the awareness that for me to have creative control on what I had to do, I had to become a producer. And that's how that ended up. And as a producer and as an actor and as a director, I have focused in this type of films that are independent in nature, that have that commonality of aspiring to bring the best in us as human beings. But then, of course, you have that other side of you that says, well, I have to still pay the bills. And I have ended up doing all kinds of different jobs in terms of acting. And not so much producing, not so much directing, but in terms of acting. Lately, I'd say that I'm more picky about what I do. I have a very full life doing other things. I'm an entrepreneur. I have a real estate business. My beautiful wife is an actor herself, and she's kind of the star of the family right now. So right now I focus on making films whenever I feel like. I go and I produce. I lately have done a couple of films. I did American Nightmare, where I was directing, producing, and acting, but that was a short film. And recently I did a film called One of These Days that had to do with police brutality. And that film is now going through the film festival circuit. Eventually it will be released. But like I said, there are independent films that probably won't reach a large audience, but allows me to really feel fulfilled as an actor and as a director or producer, if you will. And you know, I think that my commitment is that it doesn't really matter how I exert myself. It doesn't matter if it's acting or directing or giving a speech or talking on an interview. What matters the most is what is my intent behind. And my intent behind, like I said, is ultimately to awaken our common humanity. And yes, Jesus did it with beautiful stories, and so many other storytellers and wonderful filmmakers are doing it. Some other people can use it for many other purposes, just for entertainment alone. And I have no judgment about it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But as a creator, that's been my focus. And therefore, I have not been as prolific as many other people because I am very picky as to what I get involved in. But I'm very proud of what I've done.
Oh, that's lovely. And your No Turning Back co-star, Joe Estevez, who I've actually still kept in touch with over the years, has had a similar kind of perspective, just, you know, put a price on certain things and then, you know, once again, adjust what stuff, you know, really rewards you emotionally as a performer versus tells a great story and, you know, let the dominoes fall where they do instead of getting all caught up in the fame, the glory, the fortunes, you know?
Yes. And what is interesting is that when you, I mean, the type of films that I've done may not have a large audience, but quite frankly, they remain relevant through the years. You're talking about Not Turning Back, and it's a film that has close to 20 years. And yeah. I still get some checks from selling the film. And it is because it's about immigration. And immigration is still at the forefront of our political discourse, of our...
it's still a very sad topic. We're still here. And kind of like guns and abortion, no one wants to come up with a solution. Like, can we make it to where it's easier to get in? Can we, you know, stop having all this red tape instead of the shaming process? It's very saddening every time it is brought up. And it's like, but there's no solution. There should be a solution.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I think it's because these subjects are heavily politicized and, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, they're used to divide us as people. And it's sad when we could have find some common ground. In the case of immigration, I mean, I am an immigrant myself. I was undocumented immigrant at some point, and I've had this.
I have friends who are still undocumented. They have a green card and they've surpassed it, but I'm always very, very careful because I don't want any Fed with too much time on his hands to get the wrong idea, you know? And it's shame. Yeah. Much like you're talking about with this new documentary that you come out with, it's really a shame that we've now had to kind of police the police too, even though that's a, you know, century-wide issue at this point.
Yes. No, you're right. You're right. But, you know, I think that we're heavily divided in our society nowadays, obviously, among across different subjects. And at the end of the day, if you really talk to people, first of all, you realize that in essence, we're all the same. We all strive for a better life. We all strive to provide for our family. We all strive to, you know, live a decent life in terms of being able to, you know, have friendships and address the issues that are, you know, separating us from a perspective that is usually not that divided as it's presented by politicians. Mm-hmm. But somehow politics brings the worst in us. And unfortunately, there are some political leaders that will use that for their own political gain. And immigration is one of them. I mean, it is a clear example. So there is this narrative of illegal aliens coming here and stealing our jobs and being, now they're even talking about terrorists coming through the border and
dangerous
and all that. And quite frankly, the vast majority of immigrants, they come here seeking a better life for themselves, pursuing the American dream. And in most cases, especially those that are seeking asylum, they're really fleeing life-threatening violence and extreme poverty. And we all would do that same thing.
Exactly.
Caught in those circumstances. But somehow we hear the narrative that is presented to us through politics, and all of a sudden we take sides in one way or another, and we seem to be so heavily divided. But in truth, we're not. Nobody wants criminals coming through the border. Of course, we're on the same page with that. But at the same time, why not give opportunity to people that come here seeking a better life when, in fact, we do need them to grow our economy? Right now, as it is, you know, unemployment is very low. And by and large, these immigrants are coming to fill jobs that Americans, by and large, don't want to do, or at least don't want to do at those low wages. So they help us to develop our economy. They make our country strong. But like I said, the vast majority are people that are coming with those wonderful intentions, yet sometimes they are perceived under the eyes of illegal aliens. And all of a sudden, just the terminology alone, illegal alien, creates an animosity and a separation with that person that in and of itself is not real, you know, should not exist. They are just people like us doing the same thing that we would do in their circumstances. So I think storytelling allows us to to reach that gap that is created and allow us, like in the case of Nota Nimba you were talking, I mean, this is a case of an undocumented immigrant that came to this country and it's based on, it's inspired on actual events. And he was involved in a car accident and he panicked and he ran away. And in this car accident, there was a little girl that died. So this is an immigrant, undocumented immigrant that, you know, comes to the US, kills a child and runs away. Most people thought there is no way anybody's going to care about that film. Like, you know, and surely I had a very hard time with the financing of the film. But I sincerely thought that if anybody would get into understanding his life and the love of this little daughter that he had, that people would care and would empathize and would have compassion. And so that's how this film, Not Turning Back, came about. And
you stuck with the three basic truths. You told actual truths in the movie. You had a wonderful cast, including Lindsay Price. And
yes,
kudos to your film crew for making it bigger than it was. And because, like you say, it's just so hard to make a consistent movie when you're having financial backers just constantly play games. And
well, the industry, it is an industry. And of course, they want to see the payoff. So when I was at the time looking for financing, they would ask you, so who wrote the movie? And I said, well, I did. And who's directing? Well, I am. And
okay, this handsome guy right here.
You know, who's in it? You know, the big question, who's in it? So, you know, ultimately, people end up financing films that they feel are going to be successful based on the name talent that they have. And I did not have a budget to obviously afford that, nor did I think that was going to service my film well. So, but, you know, you'll be surprised. This film has been sold to you know, like 70 countries. It's a film that has won like 25 International Film Festival Awards. It's a film that has made money, which that in and of itself is a wonderful success for an independent film. And so, you know, at the end of the day, if you really, if you are passionate about what you do and you have clarity and you have a vision, you can get a group of people that really will come to make that vision into fruition, and you can make a wonderful film. So there is no need to have name talent. There is no need to have tons of money to make a great film. What matters is that you have a lot of clarity as to what you want to say and that you're very committed to your vision, because it is true, it's going to be very difficult. So you do need a level of passion and commitment to enroll others into your story and make it happen for real. So it's not easy, but it's possible. And obviously, my example, I hope, inspires others to do something similar if they want to pursue this career.
Totally, totally concur. I've been on numerous indie films and it's been the same story every time. You know, it's like, if you lose interest in this, it's not going to get done. It doesn't matter how much you've spent on it. If you are not like invested in it emotionally 100%. And I almost look at it like when you're doing an auction, you know, it's like, what's your limit? How much are you willing to bid on this? If you don't have a stopping point, there's no telling when you will finally just burn out and say, you know, man, I've lost everything. I don't want to do this anymore. And I think your movie also just works so well because, you know, it should not be as obscure as it is, but it's, I think the reason it was just such a rental success is it was fast paced. It knew when to speak up on the different topics and have them serve the bigger narrative. And then the tragic end felt so real, didn't feel Hollywoodized, and it just painted, like you say, a bigger picture. It just food for thought in addition to dramatic frills. And I'm seeing there's kind of an increase in that now, where now that we can do stuff digitally and you were coming in kind of as that scene was about to start up, it's interesting how now that we got these shortcuts, there really isn't any excuse for why we can't find other ways to do it with crowdfunding and all that. It's
true.
Well, what have you made of this latest developments and changes?
Well, I mean, technology is definitely giving us the opportunity to become storytellers with very, very little budget. We all have the opportunity to, even with our phone camera, and to make a movie nowadays. The difficulty is the distribution. And so this is the easiest of times to create product, but there is a lot of content out there, and the distribution still is difficult, because when it comes to distribution, if you want to do it, let's say, for example, in theaters, you're competing with the big films that have a lot of budget in terms of advertising, and that makes it very difficult for you to do well. So, you know, most people look other avenues to distribute their films, and you can do that. I think we all have to get creative, and we all need to be a good business people in terms of succeeding in our industry. So it's not just about being making something creatively interesting, but it's also about you understanding that if you are going to do this as an independent filmmaker, you're going to have to also become an independent distributor. You're also going to have to take that film to the film festivals, win awards, get good reviews, and get everything that is needed so that you get then an audience for it. And quite frankly, you mentioned something about not turning back, which is true, which is a story that is socially relevant, but the way it's told is in itself, you could argue that it's entertaining. And ultimately, as filmmakers, you know, when you paint, when you do other things with the arts, you're not playing with other people's budgets. You are not having a big crew. So your responsibility is very limited. You can just do whatever you want and be fully self-expressed, and that's it. That's what I've done, and so be it. But when you're being a filmmaker, there are some additional responsibilities. You are usually borrowing money from other people, and you're usually having the support of many other people. And therefore, you do have a responsibility to make sure that that film can find its audience. So if you make something that is really obscure, or something that is really dark, or maybe socially relevant, but very slow paced, not well put together in terms of the script, you can find yourself putting a lot of money or playing with a lot of money from other people and not be able to deliver. And that's why, quite frankly, there are many independent filmmakers that they are able to make one film and that's it. Many. And it is difficult. There are actually many filmmakers that they have made a movie that has never been distributed. It has been all the effort to write it, to produce it, to get the team, and then you don't have the money, or you don't have the means or whatever to distribute it, or maybe the content of it is just not that interesting for some people to think that it deserves to be seen by a big audience. So you have to keep that in mind when you work in this industry. You have to make projects that are true to who you are as a human being, that express your, you know, whatever you want to express as an artist, but at the same time, keeping in mind that you have to do it in a way that will, you know, that will get an audience interested in it. And that's fundamental, because that's different in other art forms, but in filmmaking is very important.
Concur. And it's just kind of a shame that so many markets have been oversaturated to where you really don't know when a one-of-a-kind kind of movie that is its own blood, is its own ideas, will emerge again, because it's just so easy to kind of want to build on the previous success. And I feel for so many people who wear, again, so many hats, have a big voice, but don't. Then you get a mixture of they got a great idea, but they don't know how to, you know, direct it or put it into script format, so they need some other people to collaborate with. It's a puzzle sometimes.
My advice is make sure you have a very, very solid script, because the script you can develop with other people. If you do it yourself, it won't cost you anything. But I would suggest that you do it professionally. In other words, it's very important. I tell you what, I honestly think that 50% of the success, if not more, 50% of the success of a film is the script. If you have a great script, you can make a great movie. If you don't have a great script, it doesn't matter how much money you put into it, it's just not going to work. So why do I say this? Because once you have a solid script, first of all, it's easier to attract the people that are going to believe in the script to make it happen, whether it's the financiers or the crew, etc. And secondly, because that phase of development, like I said, costs very little or nothing. It's just you working maybe with a professional writer if you create that partnership. But once you get into pre-production and production and post-production, that's where all the money goes out really fast. So you cannot start improvising in that moment. I'd say make sure that you have a very great script, and make sure that you also have a very solid pre-production that you can do with two or three people before you get into production. And I think that is a very key element for you to succeeding in this industry. You cannot start playing and improvising during production. And I think that's a pitfall of many filmmakers that go to production and then all of a sudden, they go to a location and they haven't secured the location. And all of a sudden, something happens. They cannot shoot in a location and they have to improvise. And that, next thing you know, they have to shoot for another 1 or 2 days because they couldn't. So that's where all the nightmares happen and where films go out of budget. And that's what I would suggest that people focus on, making sure that you have a very good script from the get-go that is really exciting enough. Send it to your friends and send it to people that you don't know and get their feedback. And if they are all excited, if they really love it, then that's a good sign. Then you can maybe start looking into producing it, but not beforehand.
1,000%. I see so many people who are like afraid to show their mom and pa, and it's like, well, if they're not movie people, show it to your top five friends, you know? Come on.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, you know, I understand. People think they're going to steal my idea. No, I at some point you do have to have...
Too, yeah, I would get that too. I'm like, they've signed an NDA. That's not even part of this discussion. No.
You know, yeah, yeah.
Because it's going to haunt you down the road, even if it's 20 years down the road, if you go, man, but if I got just, you know, five other people just, you know, whispering in my ear a suggestion that would have made me avoid all this trouble, you know?
Yes. I agree with you. You do need to hear the feedback that is coming your way, and you cannot be stubborn about it. And like I said, developing a great script does take time, and it does take a lot of craft. I don't want people to take it lightly. I consider myself very good in, honestly, I feel that my biggest strength has been not so much that I'm such a great actor, writer, or director or producer. My biggest strength is that I've been very clear into what I wanted to do. And I've been able, with that clarity, attract the right people that were really talented to make it happen. So, you know, when you're a filmmaker, ultimately you are a leader and you need to enroll others into your vision. And that's the most important thing. If you're really good and you have a very clear vision, a very wonderful idea that is on paper in a very solid way, you will get the right people and you will get maybe the right writer that will come on board to make it even better. Writing, it does require a lot of craft. It's not something that you can just improvise. It's not enough to have the great idea. You need to develop it. And so in my scripts, I mean, the short films, no, I have written on my own, but in my, even my Not Turning Back, I did have a co-writer and she was a professional writer and she brought her own wisdom and both of us were able to pull it off. But like I said, you have to sometimes surrender yourself with the right people to make things happen and make sure they are, you know, as strong as they could be.
Lovely. And see, this is just what's so heartwarming about these chats. And you're about the third guest I've had on who's talked about how everyone wants to feel validated from overall the same ultimate goals. And but it just also seems like so many people just need to keep just being patient and finding reliable peers instead of just getting drawn out by the toxicity of real life, you know? I've seen how Edward James Olmos has kind of been everyone's dad on every other film or TV production he's been on, where he's just gotten the directors comfortable and he's kind of coached everyone into, hey, we're in it to win it. This is like a basketball, you know, tournament. And what would you say has been some of your other just great people you've surrounded yourself with who have helped you help with your modus operandi and helped with your mental health? And just clarity on what you want on every project?
Well, every project is unique and it is a team effort for sure. And I have so much appreciation and love for the people that have worked with me through the years in different projects. But by and large, the people that I've worked with have changed over time, you know, people move forward in their lives with different things. And when you are working with little budget, most of the times you're working with people that are starting in the business. And I think what gives you satisfaction is seeing people that, like I said, that maybe they have never done a film. And then to see them afterwards, after they've worked with you and they've had that experience, to be able to branch out and have so many other things and work in bigger productions. And then I cannot hire them, but how happy I am that they have a beautiful career.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, my biggest support and partner has been my wife, Susana Santiago, that is in and of itself a wonderful actor and producer. And I've my couple of the last two projects have produced with her. And I think because we both have similar backgrounds, we were actually both born in Spain, although we met in the US. But
oh, wow.
not so much about that, not even so much about the fact that we're both, you know, actors, but just spiritually speaking and creatively speaking, we have very similar ideas and we support one another. I am very visionary in nature, but I'm very disorganized. And I need someone that brings to me that level of organization skills that are needed to make things happen. And she brings that to the table. So I'd say that I want to give kudos to Susana Santiago. And I think that's the partner that I've had through the last almost 20 years that has been consistent in everything I've done creatively and has been there for me, whether she was involved in it or not, but just giving me the space to just do whatever I wanted to do. And sometimes supporting me as an actor. She was an actor on American Nightmare, which is a short film that I did. And she was a producer in One of These Days, which is our latest film, where we were both producers and I was also the lead actor. And American Nightmare, interesting enough, is a film that had to do with the separation of families at the border. And we were just talking about American Nightmare 2 because, as we have heard, Trump has a plan to go back. Of course, we all know 2024.
Oh,
and quite frankly, when you hear what he says that he wants to do in terms of immigration, I mean, we just heard a couple of days ago him saying that that the immigrants are poisoning the blood of Americans, of our country. You know, type of language that is really scary. You have to go back into Hitler to think people talking that way. And he's talking about restoring the zero tolerance policy that was responsible for the separation of 5,000 children from the parents, even though that policy has been ruled already as illegal and unconstitutional. But I don't know. I don't know if it's just because he wants to get people supporting him or he just really believes that he's going to do this. It seems that it's a wonderful opportunity for us activists to think how we can counteract all this propaganda and all this. And so before it becomes a policy, we're already thinking creatively, what is that we can do? Because I think the Democrats in this particular case have not been very good at presenting an alternative narrative for immigration or finding good common sense solutions that have been applied. And therefore everybody sees the chaos at the border. And therefore what we are losing is the intimate stories of everybody that are coming here and why they're coming here. They're not coming here, you know, because they want to. They come here because they're desperate. They're desperate for a better life. And we need to understand their stories. And that's what Susana and I intend to do now back in this coming year in 2024 as we approach another presidential election, if you will.
I totally feel your pain. I have had to unfriend so many people on some of our film sets who were sharing a lot of fascist viewpoints. They would label anyone they hate as a drug dealer or a rapist. And I know this is just morbid talking, but I also have felt some of your pain. I just talked to presidential candidate Jay Uger, who's best known for the progressive news network, The Young Turks. And
Yes, I know him very well. He's running. And so,
oh, really?
And so is Marianne Williamson, by the way, that I also think is a wonderful candidate. And I think that it's good to have alternatives on the Democrat side as well.
We have to. We can't keep surrendering to the bullies.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's unclear yet who's going to be the nominees on both parties. But it seems Trump has a very solid lead, and it seems that he's crimes, or at least the fact that he's been indicted for 82 crimes has not stopped him from getting all the necessary support to be the leading candidate on the Republican side. And that itself is, you know, it's sad in my opinion. But then again, you know, it offers us an opportunity to offer an alternative vision for the country. And I think that it's good to have different voices doing that and not just Biden.
Totally. You have to get everyone ultimate viewpoint and then just configure it into where it makes sense logistically and every day. And then, like you say, you do have to filter out a lot of the crud that is just so just very reprehensible. And it's just I should totally introduce you one of these days to my pal Nathaniel Avila and Ruby Rodriguez, who I've done many PSAs with. And it's just been eye-opening how sometimes, even behind the scenes on a film set, you've had to remind people, hey, you know, we're talking about sensitive subject, you know, matter here. You know, would you yell bomb at an airport? Same condition here. You can't make these kinds of jokes here on set. You know, we got to have a clean, fast shoot, you know, regardless of the budget. And make sure the intent is clear. And it seems like there's still various other festivals, to your earlier points, that do want to have an overall kind of PBS kind of viewpoint on showing material that can still be addressed without getting into, you know, the abyss of just disinterested people saying hurtful things. Which festivals do you feel have really actually done a good job of illustrating just these powerful narratives and been a healthy way to network with other people who do want to actually discuss some of life's distrusts and issues?
So quite frankly, I have been a little bit out of the film festival circuit recently. I was at a film festival in Santa Monica a couple of weeks ago, and I was invited to speak about this film One of These Days. And I was there with my co-producer that was telling me that the film was having a hard time landing in film festivals precisely because of the content being controversial in terms of police brutality and all of it. But I think there are many festivals in Europe that I would say have a very clear mandate, and some of them are very focused on particular subjects that I feel are doing a wonderful job and are finding audience. I think in the US, somehow COVID has affected a lot of the film festival circuit. There is a lot of digital film festivals right now that you watch online. I mean, definitely you have to have your respect for Sundance and all the film festivals that have done a great job in providing a voice to independent filmmakers. But I don't know. When you talk about the film festivals that I've enjoyed the most of them have been in Europe. And those festivals do have a budget, because in Europe, they look at film as cinema. They look at it as an art form. And they have subsidies from the government. And all of a sudden, they can afford to fly a filmmaker into their own town and provide you with a hotel. And I mean, a lot of film festivals in the US, you have to pay on your own. The hotel, the food. And so what happens is you have a lot of independent filmmakers that are really making all this effort. And then they go to a film festival, and with all due respect, they don't have an audience over there because, you know, maybe there's 20 people attending the particular film. I'm not blaming the film festivals. I think that we have come to a time where everything, especially since COVID, is so easily available to us through social media, through our phones, that we are not attending film festivals and engaging as much as we could in these important conversations. Because what I like the most about the film festival is not just to enjoy the movie, but it's the conversation that happens after the movie, is the Q&A.
Yeah.
That's where you get to know people, to connect, to exchange ideas, to, you know, I don't know, network, if you will. And those things, I, you know, like I said, when I have attended recently in the US, I was a little bit disenchanted with the fact that not many people were attending the festivals. It is different in Europe, and I think that part of it is because, like I said, in the US, film is looked upon as an industry, and whereas in Europe, it's still looked upon as a cinema, as an art form, and therefore they do have more means to reach out to an audience and to bring the filmmakers and bring better films and create a better create a better film festival, basically.
Here's hoping, because yeah, I have seen some issues like that pertaining to certain select festivals. It does seem like it's possible to do a few different things, especially reserve local inexpensive theaters or libraries even. But like you say, it's just attracting a reasonable crowd, more than 10 people, you know?
Yeah, but listen, at the same time, I don't want to. Listen, it is important. All film festivals have a purpose, and I think that there are filmmakers that do have to make a choice as to where to attend. I was thinking about which one has been my favorite film festival based on your question, and I remember Malaga Film Festival in Spain was really,
Madeline.
really special to me. Malaga is a town in the southeast of Spain. Beautiful weather, beautiful city, and it is a film festival that is basically for first-time filmmakers. And in this case, I'm talking about when I did No Turning Back, because that was my first feature-length film as a filmmaker. And I remember there being with my family, specifically with my parents. And I gotta tell you, my mother has been somehow supportive, but that wasn't the case for my father. Sometimes when you're an independent filmmaker, you have to look for money between friends and family, and you know that very well. And my mom helped me a little bit, not so much my father, and obviously that was a bit of an issue. But I invited him to come and see the film. And after the film played, it was beautiful because we were actually on the second level of the theater. There were like two different levels.
Oh,
And
lovely.
the film finished, people started clapping and they started clapping on my direction. And I was there with my father. And I gotta tell you, I think it's the first time I've seen my father crying.
Oh, wow.
And I felt it was so moving that you had the recognition of this huge audience that was filling up the festival, the theater, applaud to you where you are up in the balcony. And we ended up winning the audience award on that film festival. And that was such a special and unique experience. So I have to tell you, that is unusual for you to happen unless you happen to go to Sundance and win a Sundance. Okay. And then of course, yes. But we all know the chances of that happening are so slim. But there are other wonderful film festivals. So don't take me wrong. I think that we need to defend film festivals. We need to defend people doing their best to attending them, and filmmakers to do an effort to go to them and creating these conversations. I'm just saying that since COVID has hit, I have noticed how the attendance has gone down and how filmmakers have to make this very difficult choice. Is it worth for me to apply to many festivals and pay for the submissions and then eventually attend them when it's costing me so much money and then I don't see a payoff because the audience is not there for me because I'm not getting maybe the accolades that are significant enough for me to be able to sell my movie with them, or I'm not getting the reviews from the media because the press is not attending the film festival. So that's when it becomes difficult. But you have to choose what type of film you have. You have to know where to submit it. And of course, you need to be passionate and follow through. And eventually, you'll find your audience, and eventually, you may be able to sell the movie or use it as a platform for you to make your next film or be hired to do whatever you want to do in life, as a director, as a producer, or as an actor.
Lovely. Are there any online directories you would recommend? I know Film Freeway was kind of going big for a while, and then you had to do like some double check to make sure that festival was still current.
Yes, it is current and it's working. I think there is a couple of other alternatives right now. I don't have a preference. I think they are good. I think it works when you create a submission package and then you have them them submit to as many as you can, because nowadays it's very simple. You just click which ones you want to submit to, and it goes. You have to pay the fee, of course. But, you know, back in the day, we have to create, like, you know, with envelopes.
Xerox,
and everything, and send it out, and pay the fees, and hope that it would get there. And, I mean, it was complicated and more expensive. So nowadays, technology allows us as well to with a click of a button, make sure that our film goes to as many festivals as you want.
This is heartwarming to hear. And I applaud you for putting that creative pursuit. And it almost makes one wonder if there are more filmmakers need to kind of start their kind of clubs and just say, hey, you know, let's get in this one giant car and, you know, travel to this one, you know, part of the country together. You know, everyone pitches in, you know. It's because I'm seeing still just kind of, even post COVID, some people are hesitant to reach out to other people, or they got a complex day job. And I get that. That can also be hard to weigh in. Yeah. Given how your day job is now entrepreneuring, what do you also recommend for those who are also had their fair share of checkbooks and Microsoft Excels and numerous emails to make?
I tell you, that's one of the areas where my wife also supports me. Everything that is technology related, I put it out to her, because it's not my forte. So I wouldn't be the best one, quite frankly, to advise in that regard. But definitely, I mean, nowadays you even have AI, right? You can do a search.
Yeah.
You can put whatever you want, and that AI is going to give you a much better answer than I can, you know, come up with right now for you. But yeah, you do have to use technology, including AI, including, you know, Google. And also, I think for support, there are groups, you know, that you may want to be part of. Local groups, there may be film festivals, but there is also filmmakers associations that exist, independent filmmakers, and of course you have the unions, if you are able to get into a union. So, I mean, there are ways for you to get the support that you need, but at the end of the day, quite frankly, when you start in the business, it does require a lot of effort on your part. I wouldn't give up my job. That I wouldn't do, okay? I think it's important that you find a way to keep your job and to still do that development phase that we talked about until you have a solid script.
Take that 2-week vacation and just spend that time, you know, just done.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, if you have the money and you have the funding, or you receive an inheritance, by all means, go and jump on it. But, it is a risky business, and we should not fool people as far as that is concerned. But yeah, technology helps a lot, even with script formatting, with anything you do. Okay, so again, I cannot really be the best right now to give you recommendations, not to mention that I have been kind of semi-retired from the industry in many ways recently. But you have all the tools at your disposal just with a Google search, and look for it, and look how you can find a group of peers that support your same, have the same vision, and how you can work with them, have a chat group, have a support group with people that are like, or you can sometimes find them on TikTok, you can sometimes find them on Facebook, you know, but just people that are on the same wavelength that you are, that creatively are similar to who you are, and then find that support for one another. That will be very important as well. And that's how you can also get a lot of advice from people that are on the same page as where you are, that are on the same stage of your development or your career that you may be. So that's what I did at the time, and that's what I would recommend people that they do as well.
This has been just very heartwarming and very enlightening. Thank you ever so much, though, for a full hour of this, because, you know, you see so many people who want to just, you know, talk about positive things, but they don't initiate these conversations. They don't initiate these realistic perspectives. And so it was cool to kind of get some closure, as well as reintroducing just kind of the oldest trick in the book, you know?
Yes.
Take care of yourself, take care of other people, and then you know, if you don't have the time, make the time. And so I'm glad you provided some building blocks, as well as just happy to know about you reflecting on your accomplishments.
Well, kudos to you, Cameron, for having this podcast to reach out to others.
Anytime.
That may find some source of inspiration in the work that you do, interviewing other actors, and look at these conversations to get the advice that they need to move forward. So yeah, it is important that we do our best to create our own dream, and then that we do our best to then share that dream, that experience with others, and that we share our knowledge, or that we do what you do, create a podcast, which is also another avenue for people to connect with one another and help each other in our common objective to make creative work that is interesting, that has something to say, that is socially relevant, that eventually can make an impact in other people's lives one way or another.
I really do appreciate that pat on the back. I have gotten some lovely feedback on some of the real life stories and perspectives offered on here. But yeah, ultimately, you really do want an interview that inspires others to come out of their shell and realize, you know, they're not alone. And I fell into this by accident through, once again, that once COVID took over, and I was like, you know, I'm seeing kind of a interest in people wanting to embrace the radio side of things, come up with their own audio dramas. You know, true crime's a big thing now. There was actually a wonderful expo here in Dallas about 3 years ago, and they offered some helpful tips on, you know, the do's and don'ts of a history podcast. And it's like, hey, you know, you got to interview people from all sides. If it's a current, you know, legal matter, leave it alone. You don't want any of that heat. You don't want to influence the jury. And if you know how you want to document each episode, you still want to hire additional script writers to, you know, carry the momentum of the story forward, and don't dramatize it. It's, you know, it's going to do more harm than good. You know, you really want to make sure you're as close to the event as you can. And it was just, yeah, you're right. People have to get comfortable in their own skin while also, you know, listening to other helpful people instead of just getting annoyed by someone who's kind of glam but no substance on their talk show they listen to. And it's like, well, if you don't like what you see, you know, be part of a rise of an influence that you do relate to. You know, it's so easy to complain, but it also costs nothing to compliment each other.
So true. I completely agree. You know, I remember when I first came to the U.S. and I was coming, as you heard, from this success in telenovelas, being a popular actor, and I remember when I came here, I was like, this is interesting, because I was used to being offered leading roles, and all of a sudden I come to the U.S. and the roles that they were offering me were depicting Latino characters in very poor light. The drug dealers and the criminals and all that. And it was sad. And I felt like, you know, that's not my essence. You know, I'm okay. I can play the villain in a given moment in a movie, and that can be very creative and fun. I have nothing against it. But ultimately, I was noticing all these stereotypes that exist. Mm-hmm. And you know, many actors just complain. They're not giving us opportunities. We are being stereotyped, you know. But then there comes a moment where you have to take responsibility. And then that is when I said, okay, well, this is my time to be a producer and to create my own content. And so you made a very good point. I think it's very easy to come to any creative endeavor and immediately get discouraged, and immediately complain about the lack of opportunities or the difficulties, and at the end of the day, if you really mean it, if it comes from your heart, you need to commit to it, and you need to do whatever it takes for that to come to fruition. And it's not going to be an easy path, but if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. But you do need to put your part, and you cannot be there complaining, you cannot be there using excuses, at the end of the day, it's been hard for all of us. And, you know, you just have to do your best. And it doesn't matter. I mean, this is not just for acting or producing or directing. It applies to anything in your life. Okay.
Absolutely.
We need to, be responsible for our lives and see how we can, you know, do something about it instead of complaining and being victims. And that's what I, you know, that's also what you hear in the political discourse. Everybody complaining about the other. Everybody playing the role of the victim. You know, what happened to me? And, well, listen, it's not all politics. And it's not all the fault of immigrants or whatever you make up, okay? You got to do your part. You got to do your best to wake up, be positive, be focused, work hard, and eventually you will succeed, no matter whether you are an actor or you choose to do something else. If you really like it, it's important that you really like what you do, because otherwise you won't have the passion and the time or the commitment. But if you really like what you do, you know, make sure that you do whatever you need to do so that you can succeed. It's not going to be an easy path, but you can do it. But you do need to have that positive attitude that you mentioned. And that's what I think sometimes is missing in a lot of people, because I don't know, we just get very comfortable in our own place, checking our phone and all the videos, and you
the
know,
phones have been
we don't
bad.
Put the time in creating our own stuff, you know?
Yeah. We were good at always keeping the phones off at the dinner table, but every once in a while I would see someone who had just really bad, like, one zero human interaction. And like you say, it's easy to lean into the negativity and be a part of it, but it's also easy to just lean out of it and just say, hey, it's not going to be part of my journey. You know?
True.
It's December. I actually look forward, because that's the month where I'm pretty much just look through my drawer and say, okay, what clothing have I not worn in 10 years? That's going to the charity I trust.
Beautiful.
Instead of this, you know, what can I get so-and-so that they'll never, you know, open up? That took a few years, you know, and I've just finally gotten over a year long battle with insomnia. But again, no mountain's high enough. You know, you just have to just keep saying, hey, in it to win it. This isn't a contest. I'm sure you've had business gurus who you've hung out with before who only are interested in bragging about their, you know, what figures they're making each year, but there's no persona beneath that, you know, fancy business suit. You know, it's,
yeah,
and then you have others who can do both. They can be a cool business guru and a pretty awesome human being, but it's tough to find at first in that maze, you know.
Yes, I see what you're saying. I mean, there are all kinds of people. I think you just have to find the one that works for you, the one that inspires you, the one that you really like. And if there is somebody that you don't, you just move on and not focus on any negativity. One thing that has worked for me very well is just love for life, love for people, love for everything, love for animals, love for the planet. Like that energy of love that I feel is present in me, it's been the best energy that I've had to move forward with everything. And I've gone through challenges, but when your focus is on not complaining precisely or not being a victim, but on solving issues as they come, then problems instead of problems are challenges or opportunities in many cases, and you can work through them. So yeah, we're all dealing with many issues, and of course we need to have compassion and understanding. And you were talking about insomnia. I cannot even imagine how difficult that may be.
It makes you think stuff that you don't even agree with, like, I'm dying, I can't do this. It's like, I can totally do this. I'm not dying.
Yeah.
But it just contributes to, again, all the negative clout that we all have in our bodies. Yeah. So,
but you know, what I would say is that is a very important thing is to just be kind to yourself. Do your best, but don't judge yourself. I see a lot of people also that are coming from very judgmental environments, and they are very hard on themselves. And you gotta be your best fan, okay? You gotta love yourself, and you gotta believe in yourself first, so others then can believe in you. So mental health is important as well as physical health. So make sure that you do what you need to do to take care of yourself and to love yourself and to find that space of love and comfort within you. For some people, it may be meditating. For others, maybe going and commuting with nature. For others, maybe just having a diet that works for them, that maintains them healthy, or going to the gym or whatever it is. But find balance in your life so that you can love yourself and come with this energy to the world to create. All creation comes from the energy of love. And if that's present in you, it will be easier to create, and it will be easier to attract the right people to make those dreams of yours come reality. So take care of yourself. It is Christmas time. This is the time of thinking about loving one another. And that's what I will start the conversation and what I would like to end. One of the things I do right now, I didn't tell you, is I'm president of a nonprofit. It's called Gente Unida. And precisely, we do support immigrants that are here with no connections, that are here with no family, many cases, that are here with no papers, that are here sometimes with no possibility of working, given the circumstances where they are in. And so we this is the opportunity for us to, hey, listen, you're a human being. It doesn't matter whether you're Mexican or Nicaraguan, whether you're legal or not legal. What matters really is that we are human beings. That is the essence of who we are. We need to look at each other as human beings. And from that perspective, we can support one another. And when you give that space and that love to others, those people, I mean, they really become amazing people. And I'm going to end up telling you the story of my son, because he came to the border as an undocumented immigrant himself. And he was a child. And he came actually escaping the drug dealers, because they kind of recruit him. He was living in the streets because it's a sad story. To make a long story short, he was abandoned at an orphanage. And this was a poorly run orphanage. And since 8 years old, he left the orphanage and he was living in the streets until he was recruited by the drug dealers, the coyotes, to be a coyote precisely, to help people cross the border from Ciudad del Paso to and then he experienced all kinds of abuse, and at some point he sought refuge in the U.S. and he stayed here. And I had a chance to meet him at a center where they had, it was a shelter where they have some immigrants, but they focused on children. In other words, people that are younger than 18. Back in the day, I'm talking about quite a few years ago. But anyway, when I met him, because I was doing some, volunteer work, and I was actually sharing one of my movies with the kids over there at the time, I had the chance to meet him personally, and I asked him, about his life and where he came from. He told me he was coming from Mexico. And I said, tell me about your family. And he said, I don't have a family. And that surprised me, because most of the kids come here actually to make money to send back home. That's how they poor they are. And I said, so he told me his story a little bit like I just told you. And I said, so now that you're here, what do you want? And he actually told me what I want is, it's a family.
Love, yeah.
And I was so touched by that I said, well, would you welcome me as your adoptive father? And he didn't say anything at that time. He was like taken aback. But then a week later, I came back and we interacted again. And then at that time, he said yes. And, he was coming from the streets. He was cutting drugs and smoking and having vices, because, that's what happens when you live in the streets.
Interconnected, yeah.
We're providing him a loving environment. And he is right now an amazing person. He just recently bought his own house in Los Angeles, where you know that it's very expensive to buy a house. And he has his own business, a transportation business. He's doing great. And, credit goes to him, but credit goes to love. Credit goes to the fact that no matter what you do and who you're dealing with, if you come from that energy of being positive, that you said, being loving and wanting to create connections at a human level beyond our different ideas or religions or countries of origin or immigration status for that matter, then there is opportunity for that love to flourish in ways that are unimaginable. And I'm so grateful that I had my son, Manuel, that I had the opportunity until he just moved on his own. And again, this is just an example. It doesn't matter what you do in life, but if you come with love and if you come with commitment to do your best, I think you will find your path and eventually you will succeed in whatever you want to do.
And I applaud you for being a Samaritan and being one of those many supportive voices. That's a beautiful story.
Thank you, Cameron.
Absolutely. And Godspeed to you. And I hope everyone listening to this tonight just reminds themselves that, you know, love doesn't cost anything, you know?
So true. So true. Even a smile. Just go and smile to people on the street.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's Christmas. What a wonderful opportunity for us to have the permission to just go there and be nice to people and smile and create connections where you did not imagine they could be created. And you just never know. That could be your next financier for your film.
1,000%.
So trust me, go with that energy. It really will make a big impact. Or at least I'm telling you, I feel that more than my talent in any particular capacity, it's been that energy and that vision that has helped me to be where I am and enjoy a beautiful life that is full of, you know, full of things, not just in the entertainment industry, but in many other ways. So absolutely. Thank you, Cameron. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for
what you've shared. Oh my goodness. This has been touching.
Thank you for your audience for being there and following you and watching this interview. And if anybody wants to connect with me, I do have a website that is Jesus Nebot, JesusNebot.com. And as a matter of fact, if you want to send me an email, you can also just send me an email to Jesus, Jesus, at JesusNebot.com. And I'm giving you my personal email because I care about people. When I go to film festivals, when I go to talk to audiences, sometimes at colleges and universities where my films have played a lot and where I find a wonderful audience, I always invite people, just send me an email and I will help you if I can. So thank you again. God bless and happy holidays for everyone.
Happy holidays to you, sir. Hacen unas buenas semana.
Thank you.
And I will be sure to link your personal email in here, as well as I think you linked the charity offline, I believe. I can link that in here.
I can do it. GenteUnidaSD.net, that would be. So I can pass it to you if you want. If you want to.
Please. I'd be happy to.
Yeah, I will do that. Absolutely.
Because charities are hard work, but, you know, if there's anything, you know, everybody should at least once in their lifetime definitely visit a annual soup kitchen, you know, take any toys that are collecting dust in your, you know, basement and give them to some other six-year-old, even if they don't touch it, you know, the thought counts,
and,
you know.
Or the clothes, as you said, you know, let's just recycle and share what we have and pass it along when we don't need it anymore. And
instead of complaining at a Macy's Thanksgiving parade that you find overloaded, why not go and do a local marching band, you know, something, you know, instead of.
Absolutely. Just, absolutely.
You know, don't cower in the corner. Then you're no better than the, you know, evildoers in the world. Just go out, do something that you can crown as one of your achievements.
True.
So very heartfelt, very touching, and just very real. So. You're talking to the real deal here. Jesus Nebot has been here, ladies and gents, and he's been more than gracious with his time. I wish you nothing but the best, sir. Just
Thank
keep
you.
Marching.
Thank you.
Your cries have been heard. Hopefully they keep being heard. Because, you know, these issues still need to be talked about. We got to stop complaining. Hey, why is everyone getting political? I'm like, because the violence and topical matters keep persisting. We got to keep talking about this and avoiding it.
True.
All right. Well, again, I hope the holidays are nothing but pleasant and prosperous. You be safe out there.
Likewise.
I will try. I always have to be selective about where I show some of my awesome, LGBTQ signs, equal rights signs, because sometimes there are some shady neighborhoods I pass by and I'm like, I don't want to gather unwanted, you know, shooters or gunmen. But, you know, eventually you do have to side with the invincible voice. You know, you just have to say, okay, I stand for this. If you're going to kill me for this, then I'm still in the right.
There you go. I agree. Be courageous. Stand up for what you believe. And sometimes you'll be surprised because people will support you in what you're doing. And And it's very important that we all find our voice and our purpose, and that we don't let fear stop us from doing what we're supposed to do.
Totally. Sometimes you got to be the tallest tree, so to speak. You got to plant your flag there and just say, okay, we're here at this corner. All right. Once again, thank you ever so much. Great to talk to another icon I admire, and all of together, just, I'm glad that you are just happy where you are right now. I see so many who are just letting the negativity still engulf their lives. And again, I think a lot of people are going to dig this. I'm definitely going to try and share this with some bigger crowds, and definitely refer that. I hope I can somehow position this as like the first interview that pops up too for a while.
Well, I appreciate it, Cameron, and I will support you in that and share it with my friends here. And again, if you have an interest in maybe interviewing somebody else, let me know, and maybe my wife would be happy to be on your podcast. She probably has a lot of wisdom to share with you as
oh,
well.
Oh, promise.
She has a very,
yeah, absolutely. Because that's what I'm noticing too, is I'll see so many people, they will like just scout for like the nearest person, like, oh, you know, I'll get a few ratings here. It's like, yeah, but you really got to be interested in the person you're interviewing. It can't just be, you know, ratings, ratings, ratings. And I think it's just so easy for people to just kind of get distracted. They can only do one or the other. And it's like, it's got to be all encompassed together. You got to really just, do you want to tell an actual story from this? Like, for instance, I've interviewed so many other people who, like yourselves, they've worn so many different hats. So that altogether, I think, makes for a more humane story, because so many people will just pass by, oh, I don't do valet or dishwashing anymore. I'm like, yeah, well, someone might want to still learn how that worked into your everyday, mindset, your work ethic. So many people are afraid to talk about it, you know, their first not so pleasant day job. It's like, well, it's influenced how you were, whether you like it or not. We should talk about that more than what did you do when you first, you know, kissed Tom Cruise at a convention. You know, it should be more than just something that made People magazine. You know, it should be something that stayed with you till the end of time.
True.
So once again, beyond gracious, sir. Again, I hope everyone's staying safe, and I hope this COVID pandemic does die down eventually, but we'll see.
All right. Well, listen, keep up with the good work, and
I'll try.
I look forward to listening to your podcast in the future as well.
Totally. If I see anyone who I know might even be on your same wavelength, in terms of how you approach the business, I will definitely let you know from that aspect as well. And once again.
Awesome. All right, listen. God bless, and we'll be in touch. Okay, Cameron?
Yes, sir. You got the touch.
Bye-bye.
Promise.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world, and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening.
It's a Jacked Up Review Show.